I am an alcoholic. I'm Wade Barker.
Hi, Wade.
Hi, everyone. Joe did ask me tonight to come and fill in for him. There's no way that I can take Joe's place because Joe is a better talker probably than I am. But I was told in the beginning, and this program does work in my life this way, and it hadn't failed me so far, to do sort of what I was told, leave a lot of things up to my higher power. And as I said, this has worked for me in my life for the past little over 4 years in AA. I am grateful to be here tonight. I'm grateful that I was able to come. I'm grateful for my health tonight. And I'm grateful for my sobriety through AA and you good people. I'm a little nervous, but I do feel at home, just as at home as if I were in Asheboro or Denton or Albemarle or wherever I may be in an AA meeting, because I've never met a stranger in AA, never, and I never expect to, because you people, as the ones that I see every day or three times a week at home, helps me in my sobriety and my living problems today. And because of AA and the grace of God, I don't have a drinking problem today, but I still got the same old living problem. There's not many of these people around me that I'm associated with out of AA. There's not many of those changed. They're still the same folks, but I love them more than I ever did before. Because I'm willing now to let them be themselves and let me work my program and work with you good people, and I have a happier life, so I'm more tolerant of anybody else and anything else that can happen in my life today. For this, I'm grateful. Because when I got to this program, I had long sensed, or not long sensed, because it wasn't all a drinking hell. I've had some good times drinking, because 20 years, all my life was based around drinking, except the 8 hours that I worked 5 or 6 days a week. My friends were drinking friends. My wife drank with me. We had parties at our home, and all of this. But as I learned, it was a progressive disease that I did not know that I had, and it soon quit working so well in my life. I was told then that my real self came out when I was drinking. And I believed that. I believed it. I just read that in the paper today. I think someone wrote Ann Landers that this wasn't a fact. Some of you may have read it. I was glad to learn that that was not me when I was drunk after coming into the program. I'm glad to learn some of the things about alcoholism that I know now. I'm glad of this for two reasons. One, because I can better understand myself. And another good reason for me is that I can understand the people that are still out there drinking a little bit too. I can understand that no matter what depths of drinking they are to, how mild or how serious, they still hope for that person out there, as he read tonight in the 5th chapter. And I know today that there's nobody, hardly nobody that we know that can't get help if they become willing and get honest with themselves and come into this program. I'll start back in attempting to tell you how it was, what happened, and hopefully tell you a lot about how it is now. Usually my talk ends up to be a drunkologue, since I've drank for 20 years and only been sober for 4, then that's a good percentage, and I hadn't got it all together yet. I don't have a story that starts off that I had all of these complexes that I should have drank. I was raised in one of these homes that I hear most alcoholics come from, a good Christian home. As a friend I heard on New Year's Eve, Arkansas traveler Charlie L. says, I don't know where this is such a good place to raise youngins or not. But I did. I was 9 years younger than my next brother, and I had three brothers, four of us in all. And I was 9 years younger, so I was almost like an only child. Raised in the country. I remember my father drinking. He did drink up until I was about 5 or 6 years old, I think, is the best I can remember. I remember him coming in drunk a few times. He and Mother scuffling over the gun or something or other. He'd come in with his crazy ideas that he's going to do away with himself or something. I can barely remember this. But he started going to church and therefore quit all his drinking. If I don't forget to tell you, I'll tell you a little bit more into his life as time went on. But I was raised, as I say, in the country. I didn't have to work on the farm. I was on the farm. I did a lot of work at Public Work. He was a construction worker, as I am now. And I didn't have to work on the farm. I didn't have to milk the cows. As a matter of fact, I can't milk a cow to this day. But did have to carry water to the pigs and such little things as this. But we didn't have a great deal, but we had all that we needed. I never remember wanting for anything that I really needed. I've never been hungry in my life. I don't ever remember being cold except going into those cold bedrooms that Tom and I was talking. Tom was raised a little bit further up in the mountains here than I was. And we were talking tonight how we stayed warm in those cold bedrooms. I would always turn one way and let the cover come under this side and roll the other way and come under here. And I had a real snug place there for the rest of the night. But I went on and went to school. I was the only one that stayed in school. The other boys all quit at around 16 and went into service and went their own way, so they were gone then. I stayed in school, enjoyed school. School was easy for me. I had no hang-ups in school. I think this also was a God-given talent, that it was easy for me. There was many of my classmates that studied much harder and much more diligently than I did to make the grades that I made just sort of playing along. Now, I remember in school where I had the choice. You know, I feel, and anything that I say tonight is my own opinion. This is the way I see it today. I may not necessarily see it this way tomorrow, and it's not the opinion of AA. It's my personal opinion as I see it right now. I had my own choice in school, either join the studious group and go to the movies or the swimming pool on Sunday afternoon, or go to the movies on Saturday night or Friday night or wherever. There was three or four of us there that chose to pool our money when we got up into the high school and buy a case of beer and go out way out in the country, because we didn't dare want to get caught, and get way out in the woods and drink that case of beer. And we wouldn't dare leave any of it there either. It was all going to be gone before we left it that night. I was driving a school bus at this time. This was my only income. I don't want to say that I was lazy, but I just wasn't interested in going to work as my boys are now. They, a couple of them have been working ever since they was old enough to get a job anywhere. But I wasn't interested in going to work, but I did drive this school bus for a great sum of $22.50 a month. And I knew a fellow over in Denton. This is where we went. I lived in a little community called Farmer on 49. It's a wide spot in the road there. I don't know where it's even wide. It's got a sign up there anyway. And we'd go to Denton and do our drinking. It was wet at that time, Davidson County. And we knew the man that run the beer joint over there, and we could charge our beer there. Even though we was underage, we could buy it and charge it until the bus checks come in. So this is where I got started drinking. I guess I started around 16. Didn't like it at first, of course, but I taught myself or forced myself to try to learn to drink. After getting out of school, I was drinking quite regular. I used to say when I would talk, when I first came into the program, I never lost a job from drinking, but I had to retract that statement after. I guess I do more inventory taking up here than I do any other time, probably, because I catch myself saying things that if I look back on them, then I have to change them a lot once in a while. But I did lose the first public job I've ever had, and the direct result of drinking beer. We were going down to High Rock Lake, Joe's Beach down there, and getting extending the parties on to 10, 10:30, and had to go into work on the third shift, and I wasn't always able to work. So the boss man finally decided to let me be off a couple of weeks to catch up on my sleep, he told me. And so I was relieved of my first public job from drinking. I was dating the girl who is now my wife. And we broke up along with Dan. We were sort of getting mad and break up and go back and break up and go back. And this one time I really was going to show her, you know, I guess, really hurt her, because I felt that she'd hurt me a few times along the line, so I was going to really show her this time. I told her, she said she was going to quit me with another boy, and I said, well, I'll just stay drunk until you come back. And I stayed drunk for about 9 months. Every night that I was free, I drank, and I got somewhere or made sure that she knew about it. Somebody would tell her. And I did, probably, I guess, give that girl a bad time. She acted like she didn't bother, but I think it did. I believe it did. I like to believe that it did anyway, once in a while. But after a while, we did get back together, and I was, as I say, in this 9 months, I was an alcoholic then. I could have qualified for the program then, as well as I did 20 years later, or 18 or so years later when I came into the program, because I had already at that time, I had wrecked two automobiles, both of them in a semi-blackout or a blackout. One of them was in a blackout, and the other one I blacked out for a moment and hit another car and turned over. The other one I blacked out some 4 or 5 miles before I wrecked, and another boy with me, and by the grace of God and someone looking over us, neither of us got hurt in that accident. I didn't get hurt in the accident by myself. I was drinking these times, and my father told me one time, if you'll get in before 12 o'clock at night, your chances of staying out of trouble is much better. And I've always related back to this, that every time I got in trouble, every time I got a ticket, or every time I wrecked, it was after 12 o'clock. But I was always drinking. If I'd got home before 12, then probably nothing would have ever happened. But I had to, as my boys do now, I had to experiment along the lines then. I had to do my thing, and I was doing it. I wasn't handling it very well, but I was doing my thing, just as they try to do now. And it's not been so long that I have forgotten it, and after being in the program, doing my inventory, I call it back a lot of times. And I've told this oldest boy of mine, who's had quite a bit of trouble. He can't get it all together, but he's experimented a little bit with alcohol. Thank God he hadn't, to my knowledge, messed with drugs. Even my children, the oldest boys, 17 and 19, if they have, it's, I don't know about it. But he has experimented with it, and I told him one time that he's wrecked, about 6 or 7 automobiles. And I told him it's like he wouldn't have to do everything that I'd done, just leave a few of them off. But I can be grateful, too, here that this boy, even he at that age, has seen the difference in our home, in the way the before and the after. And I'm sure that he realizes this. He don't say it in so many words. Sometimes at my birthday, when I pick up the ship, he'll say something about it. And I know it's on his mind, and I know he's seen both ways now. It's on his own choosing which way he goes. I don't really try to influence him one way or the other. But getting on back to where I was getting so rowdy and so drinking quite a bit with the boys and still trying to drive. I always loved to drive when I drank, because I thought I was the best driver in the world. And the more crooked the roads, the better I liked them. And I didn't have anything that would run fast, old cars that they would get around, get me there and back, but I didn't have anything that would run fast, so I tried to outdrive everybody, and most of the time I failed. But I knew, and I remember, in thinking back now, that I was going to have to do something, even at that age of 19. I knew that I could not go on in my free will self-will run right, as I believe the saying is, then, because I was fancy footloose and fancy free. My mother and father did not know where I was most of the time. They were up in age, and they wasn't as observant as probably a younger parent would be. And I was pretty well on my own. I still lived at home at this time. But I could come in 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and they were either asleep or didn't ever say anything about it. And I'd come in then and try to go to bed and have to get up and go back out in the yard and sit till 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. They would keep throwing up in the room, or I'd always get sick by the time I hit the bed. But I had thought that at this time that I had to do something with my life. So the thought was that maybe if I'll get married, you know, that this will help. This will help settle me down, because I need somebody to look after me. I didn't think about it in those words, but this was the whole plan. So we did get married, and it worked this way for me. I have to give my wife credit for being a vice that kept me sort of from going overboard. I would drink up to a point as far as I thought I could get by with it, you know, without having too big a fuss when I got home, and sort of cut it off. And I finally got into construction. I started in hosiery or textile, and I got back out into construction full time in 1659. And consequently, again, I give this credit to God, as I understand it, for giving me the talents that I have, because even this was easy for me as far as blueprint reading and visualizing buildings and construction has been easy for me. I didn't have to do a great deal of study for it. I do give God this credit for leaving me this talent. And I got into it in a supervisory way that time, and I enjoyed it. I never did enjoy the digging ditches, knocking out brick walls, running jackhammers, and all this stuff that construction was made up of then. And I still don't like to do those type of jobs. But I do enjoy the construction feel as far as putting together a building. And I had worked myself into, or sort of accidentally, I didn't even work myself into it, I sort of accidentally got into it, and had decided to settle down since we'd already had one child and trying to make a home. And having to pay the rent and everything else that goes along with it. Decided to settle down and take this job as a supervisor of construction. Well, construction people are sort of like painters. They're hard-headed boys, are known to be tough. They got to take a drink or something or other. And I tried to keep up with them, too. And we would always have a drink in the afternoons around the job. Anybody had, usually we'd wait until Friday. We could put it off until Friday. Or if we had a rainy day, we'd all gather up and go to Greensboro and sit around in the beer joint, since Randolph County's dry. And if we wanted to go drink class, you know, we went up and went to a place where the soda was legal. It didn't make any difference. We went over on what we call the hill, the bootleggers there, and sat around there. I never did like to drink by myself. I never have. And I always wanted to go where there was a crowd. I never kept much booze around the house, because I'd break it up, thought it would spoil or something. I just wouldn't stay around there. And two, I knew in the back of my mind all of this time that the more that I had and the more that I had access to, the more that I would drink. And this wasn't any doubt in my mind that I would do this. Not thinking at all about alcoholism. I had my brother next to me I knew was an alcoholic. He wasn't affiliated with AA. He'd never been to AA, and I'd never heard AA mentioned except for an uncle who had been to AA several years ago in the high form. But my brother, I knew he was an alcoholic, because I'd go get him at the bootlegger and take him home and sit with him, or I'd taken him to the hospital when he was in DTs. I'd taken him when he was drawn double in the waist, and when his hands were drawn back, and you couldn't straighten them out with both of your hands. And I've seen him in all of these conditions. But I could go get him at the bootlegger, drink me 2 or 3 beers, and let him sit there and wait until I got ready to go, drink me 2 or 3 beers, and then take him on home and sit with him a while. And try not to give him anything or keep him from harming himself or anything. I knew this boy had a problem. But me, no, I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't want to do anything about it. I kept on drinking this way. We had two children, then we had three children. And then we had, I don't know, I'm going to have to get down and get this one straightened out somewhere, about the fourth child, third or fourth child. I was sent out of town on a construction project. Here again, I'm relating to the places that where my drinking really got bad, and trying to say to myself again how and why they got bad. I had worked and had been fortunate enough to work in construction at home, in the area of home, in town, so I was at home each night. But this time, the boss came up one evening and said, "We got a job up in the mountains, and superintendent up there is not doing so good. We're going to have to let him go. How about you going up there? Since you know the government inspectors, I had just finished a post office renovation job, and see if you can get it straightened out." And boy, it tickled me to death. I've never been so glad to hear anything in my life, because I knew that I was the only one going. Knew there wouldn't be anybody else there at Mashburg. It'd just be me, and I was going to get me some, do me some drinking when I was there. And I lived up to each promise I made myself. I went to that little town of Andrews, North Carolina, which is a population of about 800 or so, 1,200. And I guess they still remember me there today. I haven't been back. I don't know. I I sat in the drugstore most every morning, red-eyed, and trying to get my faculty together good enough to go on over to the job. And I sat down there and drank coffee. And I drank 5 days a week that I was up there. I would come home on, most of the time I would leave there, coming home, and I'd go in. And my luck, it was then, I thought my luck, because Cherokee County's dry. That's from Waynesville, North Carolina, all the way to the Tennessee line. It's dry, it's as dry as Wendell. And there again, I thought, my gosh, I mean, looked like I could have been sent to a wet county. But it wasn't any trouble, really. I would go over to Tennessee line, get my case of beer, and bring it back. And I got me a trailer there and put it in the refrigerator. Still eat out. My intentions was getting that trailer and I could fix some meals, you know, and save some money, but it never did work that way. The refrigerator would just keep beer, and that's all. And I messed with a little mountain whiskey, white whiskey, which I liked to just... a little bit. Not a great deal, but just a little bit. I primarily a beer drinker. I didn't get on the hard stuff until the last few months, last year that I drank. I get just as knee-walking drunk on beer as anybody can on liquor, I guarantee you. And I did this. I was driving around up there, too, one night drunk, and I turned over a company truck in the river. And when I turned that truck over, I was rounding a curve, and there again, you know, I was the best driver in that mountain. I'd been up there for 3 or 4 months. But I was the best driver there, and I hit some gravel that night and lost that truck. And the odd thing about it, I worked for a company who were real tight with their money, and I was the only one that even had a company truck, only one they'd ever thought about getting a company truck, because this is just something they didn't do. You got yourself to work in back. They wasn't responsible for you. They said, "Everybody at the mill does that, so why can't you do it?" And this is their attitude, and if I worked there, I had to go along with it. But I did get a truck up there. They rebuilt me an old 56 Chevrolet truck, and they painted that thing, and just made a cream puff out of it. And I turned that thing over in the river up there one night. I was drunk. I've been drinking ever since I got off work, and this must have been like 12 o'clock or so. I've been over to Murphy and eat supper and come back by this bootlegger over there, I think, that night, and got a drink of his whiskey. I knew he had a problem, too, this old bootlegger over there. I knew that man had a problem, because I went over one night to get some whiskey, and I'd been there several times, and that night, that man, I went in, knocked on the door, and there wasn't any answer, so I went, pushed the door open and went on in. And he had somebody looking after him, too, because he was laying across that bed, passed out. I don't know how long he'd been passed out, how many days, but he had thrown a cigarette or match into a case of canned tomatoes there. We still had the little carton partitions between the jars. And this fire that he started had burnt all the cardboard out from around these jars and went out. And he was lying there in the bed. So I knew he had a problem too. I said he could breathe, but didn't burn up. But I couldn't arouse him enough. I poured me a half a pint in my little half a pint bottle and got down to South Carolina and went on my way. And then a few days later, I still had a little honesty about him. I went back, told him what I'd done, and paid him for it. Because I didn't want to be dishonest. I didn't want to steal anything purposely from anybody. But I got into this drinking thing up there, and there was I, just look after yourself thing, like I was back at 19. Nobody. So I relieved all responsibility from there. My wife was getting my check. She could take care of everything at home. I thought, well, this is my duty. I mean, she's getting the money. I mean, do what I please. I'm working on you. And that's what I was doing, drinking every night. Go uptown with the boys. I knew all the policemen there, or else I would have gotten called. Sit there and drink with them sometimes. They wouldn't drink, but they would sit there with me. And after I had this truck accident, the first thing somebody asked me the next morning when I come in town driving that old beat-up truck, it just knocked the door in on one side real bad, and it didn't hurt the running works at all. About the first thing that was said to me next morning, the old fellow that run the grading and paving outfit there said, "How drunk was you?" I didn't even know he knew I drank. Yeah. Really. But they knew it. They knew all about me. And this thing up there, I began being away from home a week, and then all of this drinking, and I didn't want to go home on the weekend. I would get down the road somewhere, you know, and especially after this wreck, I didn't come home for 2 weeks. So I didn't want to see the boss man for one thing, and I didn't care too much about seeing my wife. But I began getting further and further away from my family, and I had all these children there, and my wife was pregnant with one then. And I stayed in this stupor all during the week, and on the weekends, I say, I would come through Georgia and South Carolina, stopping all along the way, getting me another drink, sometimes get home at 3, 4, 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. Staying home, and most of the time, I'd be getting ready to leave at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock on Sunday. By 12 o'clock, I had to be getting ready to get out of there. Because I knew I was going back by Charlotte, stop in Charlotte and drink some beer, and then going back to work. This almost caused separation. Because I wasn't at home, and I wasn't any good when I was home. I stayed drunk or planned a party on Saturday night when I got home. So that just about made a full week of drinking. I was handling it pretty good as far as physically. I could stand it. I was younger then. That was in 66. I come on back home, and we sort of patched up things and got over this thing. And we quit, both of us. We just quit having anything to do with the parties or the friends or the drinking and everything for nearly 2 years. And to this day, I didn't have any program. I didn't go back to church. I didn't do anything but quit drinking. And this, my wife and I both have talked about it, was about my life, 18 months or 2 year blackout. We don't remember anything significantly good happened in this period of time. Nothing bad happened. It's just a blank. I can draw a blank every time I think about it. I can't think of anything that happened during this time. Because all I did was quit drinking. I didn't try to do anything about my life. I didn't try to do anything else. Just put the top on the bottom. But we got to yearn for old friends again and started visiting some of them down in Raleigh. And on the way down one day, we decided to have get us a six-pack because everybody else was going to have a drink. And that's all we would drink that night, you know, get a six-pack of beer, sip along, and be one of the crowd. And that six-pack was gone, I believe, before we got to Raleigh. We bought it somewhere between Durham and Raleigh, and it was gone before we got there. And then we got another one, and then we got a bottle for the night. And the old rat race was on again. We drank in the parties and so forth. I got by with this for a long time, and I got to I don't know what happened, really. The last 6 months I drank was the bad time. I began doing things that I had always said I would not do. I had gone against my own theory of life and some things that I will not do, you know, regardless of how drunk I get or whatever confronts me. There's some things, you know, that we just are not going to do. But I have begun to do all these things. And I didn't like myself for doing these things. I had joined the Moose Lodge, and I was frequent there every afternoon at 4 o'clock. I hated to get my drinks. I felt a little bigger and a little better drinking there, but the bar and buying those drinks and run across the board there a few times. I didn't play cards, but I did mess with a few pit boards and so forth, spending money that I did not have to spend. Staying in there until closing time, going to get just one or two beers, but staying until closing time at 1 o'clock most of the time. These boys were good. They would look after me most of the time. If they thought I was not able to drive, they would drive me home. So this got to be a problem, and I quit this, and now I really started out again. This lodge wasn't my problem. The problem was me and Boots and my crazy thinking. As I said in the beginning, I'm glad that this wasn't me, really. I'm glad that this was me drunk and not me as I really am, because I couldn't live with myself today if I thought that I was that way, really inside, because I'd be rotten through and through. But this almost caused separation again. This time I was leaving. You know. I always said I never would leave home. This is another thing. I said, I'm making payments on this house. I'm going to stay here. If anybody goes, you go. I mean, take the kids with you. Get out. I mean, or leave them here and go. Don't make any difference. I said, this is my place. I'm staying here. But it got so bad I couldn't stay there. Or I got so bad I couldn't stay there. And she went up to mental health, and they told her that she thought she was losing her mind, and they told her that it wasn't her. There wasn't anything wrong with her. She was sick, right, because alcohol had made her sick too, my alcohol. And they told her about AA, and they told her about Al-Anon, and told her that it wasn't her, that it was me, and she got come back home with all these messages. I told you I wasn't going to get anything but a couple of dollars. But she brought it all back home and finally persuaded me to go up there to one of the appointments she had made for me to see Joe P. As some of us were talking about the Ray, I believe, that knows Joe real well from Aberdeen. He was the alcoholic counselor then in Ashburn, had just come to Ashburn. And this is when AA flourished in Ashburn, 4 years ago, a little better than 4 years ago. I went down and talked to Joe with no intentions of quitting drinking. I just went down to talk to him, just to please everybody concerned with me. And, you know, that old boy just talked to me like you people talk to me when I come in. He didn't down me for anything. He didn't call me no sorry, nothing. He offered me a cup of coffee, and I don't know what in all was said. The one thing that always sticks in my mind is you don't have to quit drinking for the rest of your life. He said, just quit for one day. 1 24-hour. So, you know, we can do most anything for 24 hours. We can do without food. We can do without sleep. We can do without water. We can do without anything almost for 24 hours, and it wouldn't hurt us too bad. So I decided all the trouble it had caused me. He said, there's a meeting tonight up here over there at the old Western Auto store. If you'd like to go, so come on up. Well, I was staying at the motel this time. Called my wife after that, and she said, well, come on home and eat supper and change clothes if you're going up there. So I did. I went to that meeting. I don't know anything significant about really great that happened at that meeting. I liked what I saw. I guess it had to be that I was ready at that moment to do something about my life. Because I didn't like me the way I was. I didn't like me in jail for driving under the influence. I didn't like me being picked up for public drunk. I didn't like people coming to me and say, why don't you try to drink like I do? I didn't like people coming to me telling me that, aren't you drinking a little bit more than you used to? Then it gave me some trouble. I didn't like all this stuff. It isn't what I wanted to be. I wanted to drink all night, sure, but when it comes daylight, I wanted to be sober up just like that and be a good, upstanding, straight-walking citizen and walk down the street and hold my head high. But it don't work that way. There's something about daylight that just tore me up. Who's my drinking tonight? Come daylight, I wanted to be sober. It didn't work that way either, because I had to suffer a little while. But I hadn't lost a great deal. I almost lost my wife and family. I had got myself in real bad shape financially. I hadn't done myself harm physically, at least it hadn't showed up yet. Maybe later on. I was thinking there in the beginning, you know, about age. I don't know what's old and what's young anymore, because I didn't almost reach that not-so-invisible line of middle age. And so I don't distinguish young and old anymore, because I'm right in the middle. But I knew that I wasn't getting any younger, and it didn't hurt me physically that much. It had tore me up spiritually and mentally. I had almost reached the point of nervous breakdown. I thought I had just as solid a head and mind as anybody in the world knew I did. But I had just about reached the point that I couldn't live with no weight. And Wade would give me one more fit. And I didn't like it. I didn't like him. I didn't like me. So therefore, I didn't like you. I didn't like nobody. I've heard in this program that you can't give nothing away that you ain't got. And I didn't love me, so there wasn't any way that I could love anybody else or show love for anybody else. I hated a lot. I hated principles, I hated things, and I hated people. This long-time boss man I had been good to me, had done everything in the world they could for me, except pay me what I thought I was worth, and good thing if they didn't do that. I began to cuss him out, you know. Tell him exactly what I thought. Didn't like it. I knew what hate was. I knew what God's principles was, but I defiled them, and I cussed him. And I cussed my wife. And I cussed love. I cussed everything that was cussable that I could think of. And this is miserable to me. That's why tonight that I'm so grateful for this program. Because I love man. I love you people. I love my wife. I love my children. And there's so many people that I love that it just ain't possible for me to love that many people, you know, because I don't have the capacity for that, but I do. And God's mercy on me is just great. You know, He's let me come back to His church. He's let me have a little bit of serenity now. Like I say, He ain't changed all them other people yet, but they're still about the same. My wife, through the program of Violin On, has grown quite a bit. She understands, she tries to understand. She don't understand me yet, so I reckon. Maybe she ain't supposed to. Maybe this is the way it is to keep me in line. Maybe I ain't supposed to be get up there anymore. Because maybe if I was turned loose again like I was at one time just by myself, that I'd take all this thing back in my hands like I have a few times since I've been sober and everything goes all to pieces again. I think I need something to keep me in the ring. And something that I can see, hear, and touch, too. I know God will, but sometimes I need something to see, hear, and touch as you people, and you help me, too. Because people get pretty frank in AA sometimes. They tell you like it is. And you can believe it when they say it. And when I hear all of these things, I try to store them up. Not that I think, probably, whether I'll take a drink. I know I'm not going to take one today. But all these meetings that I go to, I got these things stored up in case that I'm ever confronted with a situation that I may not be able to handle, that I might try to handle and find out that I can't and forget to call on God quick enough. Now, I used to use God sort of like we do with ambulance service, wanting to be ready, have the motor warm, come get me when I was in trouble. As soon as he got me, just get on out of the way and then let me go my own way for a while. That's the way I used to use it. But now I like to thank him once in a while, you know, for the good things he did. And he has given me good things, given me good friends. As I say, AA and church is different, quite different. I need both programs. After being in AA for about 6 months or so, I had a desire for a little more spiritual walk, because this is the way that I was raised. But I can still relate to the people that maybe that wasn't raised to think of God as I think of Him. And they got a God in this program too, of their understanding. Used to, you know, I didn't like this. If they didn't see Him the way I did, I mean, you ain't seeing Him right, man. You know, if you don't see Him just like I do, then you ain't right. If you're wrong, don't feel this way anymore. And I feel like it sometimes just in the church is maybe the way that it is. I don't know. I love the church. We got a lot of good AA people in our church. The little church, there were about four or five of us in AA. And you'd be surprised as the people that's in AA that just wonders or thinks maybe they'd like to go to a Sunday morning worship service at 11 o'clock or come walking in that door Sunday morning. There's your good sitting there, too. And I always see them back at AA on Sunday night, because I don't usually go to church on Sunday night. I go back to AA. Some of them wondered over where I was on Sunday night, why everybody didn't come to church. Most of them know now. I guess all of them do, but now some of the newer ones come in, I didn't tell them right off, because they might have left if they knew this alcoholic. Self-admitted alcoholic. But we do have love there, too. Our preacher's very understanding. That's the way I got there. He visited all the AA meetings. Still does. He's understanding or trying to. He has the desire to understand people also. And he does understand people. And he does let people. And I'm glad that I can too. I think God gave all of us this right, that we can do as we please. Because He didn't say you've got to go one way or another. Sometimes my children, you know, do something. I said, all right, you go ahead and do it. I'm not telling you you can't do it if you want to suffer the consequences. That's sort of the way God works in my life. He'll let me do anything I want to. Before I get home tonight, I have no doubt that God would not, that He would allow me to stop at the first beer joint that I get to and leave here and go away and pop top on the bottom and drink. He wouldn't stop at that. No way. But He gives me inner peace, and enough inner peace that I don't want to. I have no desire to. And all these problems that I got in life, right after getting into the program, I got out and changed jobs. I forgot that thing that told me, said, don't do anything drastic, you know, too quick or too fast. Just let everything along for a while. Don't do anything. I forgot that. I quit this company that I'd worked for 13 years and got on the road. I'm going to make some of this money that I'd always been cheated out of because I couldn't work on the road because of drinking too much. Boy, I got in a mess. I'm in a mess. I moved to Virginia. Trying to build some houses, and I'd always been in commercial construction. I got on housing projects. Playing houses to blow down. We ended up coming up just like that and blew a house, the whole row of houses down one day. There about a month and a half later, that same house, set of houses, blew down again. I believe somebody's trying to tell me something, you know, and I asked my wife. And all the time, she was working. She was working back here. And I didn't do any of this. But the way it was made and the way that it was paid me right back into Asheville and what I was supposed to do. The job that I got today, I went to the restaurant one morning to ask that gentleman, who is a fine man. I knew I'd been wanting to work for him for a long time. I went in the restaurant one morning where I knew it would be on Saturday morning when I asked him for a job. And kept waiting for him to leave, waiting for him to leave. Finally, he got up to leave. I was on the edge of my chair to leave. He come over as he started out the door. Put his hand on my shoulder. Said, wait, he said, what are you doing this morning? I said, nothing in particular. He said, come on down to the office. I want to talk to you. And he went down there and said, I heard you was interested in changing jobs. Would you be interested in coming with us? He didn't know that I was going to be down there and ask him that morning. I didn't even have to do that. So this thing works for me. And these are not coincidences. There's no such a word as coincidence in my vocabulary today, I hope. This is me being willing to go along for God's plan for me in my life today. And as long as I stay in there, it's one of the fellows talking about cigarettes. I still smoke. I ain't willing to give them up yet. So I'm going to be smoking them, I'm willing to give them up. I don't know how long that'll be. Maybe one of these days I'll be able to quit it. I do appreciate you asking me here tonight. I appreciate the supper that I enjoyed so very much with the several couples tonight. I felt welcome there. I feel welcome here. I love each one of you. And come to Ashford to see us anytime that you can. Thank you.